So I starting introducing myself. I will talk about how to make contributions to the project, what kind of contributions are possible. Then I talk very short about some legal prerequisites before we can start contributing to OpenOffice. Then I'm going to explain what makes OpenOffice a little bit different in the development process and what processes we have in place when you're going to contribute code for OpenOffice.org. I then will show how the process looks like in practice. I will try to make this very short. Other speakers already told about that. And I introduced a new section here about challenges where I want to discuss some problems we currently have with the development process we have in place and possible solutions we could take on this. I'm with the STAR office team for a long time right now. I joined STAR division 1994 to StarWriter 2.0 times. Currently I'm acting as a program manager for OpenOffice and StarOffice. I'm project lead of several projects, member of the community council, and as I now heard, I'm often referenced as Ratte. I'm acting as a release manager of the current main code line. Ratte, who's wondering what it stands for, it's an abbreviation for release and tools engineer, and I introduced an extra T for it because it's more convenient to speak in German. So there are several possibilities to contribute to OpenOffice. First, it's the usual thing in the open source world, use a product, download, install it, give feedback. There's a great survey online. If you want to go a step further, you have the possibility to donate money, to donate other resources like machines, any infrastructure you can think of. There are several examples currently available right now. All that can help the project. The most important thing is participate. What does participate mean? Subscribe to mailing lists. Be a part of the community. Don't wonder about that you are not heard if you're not on the mailing lists. There you can ask questions and even better give answers. There are other possibilities than mailing lists. For example, the wiki that is available on oservices.openoffice.org, or there's another developer-oriented wiki available on gooo.org, hosted by Novell. Yes, I think there are many other possibilities you can think of on how to participate in the project. But this is a step far away from contributing to the project in developer terms, which is the topic of this talk. So if you want to go a step further, please join the project. Review the things that are done on OpenOffice.org, give feedback via mail, via the bug tracking system of OpenOffice.org called Issue Tracker. And if you then have not enough, you also have the possibility to give suggestions for enhancements, or even much better, give input for concrete specifications, for concrete features which are planned or which are suggested to get into future releases. next step would be to become a QA expert. This can be done in several ways. The first possibility is just install the latest snapshot, work with the latest snapshot, try to do your daily work with those builds and give feedback to other developers. During this work, you might file new issues and issue tracker, work with the developers on solving these issues, or even propose a test plan for new introduced features, or even older one if there's no test plan available. I think Joost, after this talk, will tell much more about the possibilities to participate in the QA project. Localization is another topic here. I think there were also some talks about localizations already, so I don't need to dive into this too much. The amazing thing about localization is that I think in localization we had the biggest participation of contributors in the OpenOffice org project. I even don't know how many people this might be. Next step would be to develop solutions for OpenOffice using the API, writing your own components, or make enhancements by compiling the code, reviewing code, review the build environment, make suggestions how to improve minor things. It's pretty easy once you have started, try to compile the whole bunch of code. Next step would be to participate in core development, meaning adding new functionality, new features, bug fixing, or another easy entry into this would be to join the porting project by doing ports to new platforms. That would be another approach to dive deeper into the code. So, some legal stuff right now. Before you can submit or contribute code back to the OpenOffice codebase, you are required to sign the JCA, the Joint Copyright Assignment, before you can submit any code. This is required because there's obviously a need to have a unique copyright holder for the whole code bases. I think this became pretty obvious if you think of the new GPL version the FSF is working on. I think without a copyright assignment, it will never be happen that the FSF is able to transition all their projects they have from GPL 2 to GPL 3, because it's almost impossible, especially in long-living projects, to ask all the copyright holders if they are fine with the license change. This would work for years. And also, we had the situation a few weeks ago that we changed our license in a very fast manner because we were able to do that because we don't have to ask the hundreds or thousands of developers if they are fine with the change of the license. There are some exceptions here. OpenOffice is using external components which are reused in the OpenOffice. And if we use this, we have to make sure that these components are license compliant with the OpenOffice license, and we have to document that we are using those external components so that a redistributor of OpenOffice can see what legal impacts a redistribution of OpenOffice could have. We see here a big picture of the possibility to integrate external components into OpenOffice. We actually have some examples like the Bitstream Vera fonts, which are not under LGPL OpenOffice license. Here in the picture we see still the Scissor license, which we have dropped, so it's a little bit outdated, but I think we get the idea if you look at the picture that we see in the upper left side, the core OpenOffice org code base, which has a clear copyright owner and a clear license. And in the middle, at the top, we see other extensions which are not deeply coupled with the code of OpenOffice, but can aggregate it with the OpenOffice code base, like the fonts, like sample documents, like clip arts, and so on. I think this is enough for that. Or are there any questions regarding the licensing and external code? I think I can also quickly go over this slide. Here the phases of software development are listed. Software development starts with the preparation phase, thinking of what you're going to do to implement, planning a change, or even write a real specification of a new functionality, then doing the implementation, the coding or hacking, and finally do the verification. Have you achieved what you're going to want to integrate into the product? Do QA, or first, does it compile? Does it compile on all platforms? And aren't we breaking any existing functionality with the new functionality we have introduced? The problem with OpenOffice is that there is a certain complexity which may differ from other projects. The first thing which might be some different is that we support a lot of platforms on our regular builds. These are various Unix derivatives, Linux, Solaris, Mac, FreeBSD, different baselines we support there. If you think of the Linux distributions which are available, and the glibc versions which are spreaded in different variations, you can imagine that this is not an easy task. OpenOffice supports a very old glibc version, which is almost not longer available on modern development machines. But if a user on an old distribution downloads OpenOffice, we ensure that the build runs. Tries this with a new Mozilla build, for example, a new Thunderbird. If you have an old Linux box, 2 years, 3 years old, you will discover that you have to recompile this by your own. It will not start because an too old glibc version. This applies also for other platforms, so that is not an easy task to do the builds, that it runs on various different baselines. Windows is the big other platform we have to support. I think the user base of OpenOffice is still so that most users are working on Windows. The code size is pretty impressive. I just counted that for the 2.0 release, there are over 6 million lines of code. When you try to compile the OpenOffice code base, you will see no other project takes so long to compile. it's not only one programming language we use, there are different languages used. It's not a simple task to get this thing compiled. It's a moving target. We are doing one or more milestones per week. So it can be, if you have compiled a milestone successfully, that is old, if it's ready with your compile. Other problem we have here is that 90% of the code is implemented in C++. We have a layered architecture there. I think there are almost 10 to 20 layers of C++. Maybe Matthias knows the exact number, but you try to dive into that, you are impressed. And I think in the Intel performance talk yesterday, we heard that is also a problem for performance tuning tools that are simply stumbled with the complexity of the code. So if you can imagine if you change in the lower levels of this hierarchy some classes, some functionality, this can impact everything in OpenOffice. And we have to think about localization. We currently have, I think, about 36 localizations available for OpenOffice.org. So just changing a dialogue or simply some strings will cause some problems if you do that shortly before release. This would lead to inconsistencies, so that you have to think about a UI freeze and some processes around a release just to ensure that the build is consistent over the platforms and all the localizations. Many of this applies also for other projects, but I have the impression OpenOffice is one size bigger than others. At least this is my experience. How many of you ever have compiled OpenOffice.org? Third of you? Oh, there's a Sun developer who has never compiled an OpenOffice.org by his own? I can't imagine that. This is just another problem. Within Sun, we have a built environment which is in some kind other as different as the OpenOffice.org built environment. We have a highly optimized infrastructure so that a Sun developer almost never compile the whole beast by his own. The Hamburg Release Engineering, the famous Hamburg Release Engineering, is providing all the builds for all platforms to all Sun developers. This would be a nice idea to have this also available for all OpenOffice members, but the huge amount of data we have to push out every week makes this almost impossible. The download of all the data would take longer as a compile of the whole stuff. But if you're in a local network, this is of course different. So this is the explanation for having different build environments within Sun and outside the Sun. It's not really the build environment which is different, it's only a different configuration of the build environment. So I think it's working pretty good. From time to time we have minor issues with it because not all configurations are tested within the Sun environment, so that Pavel stumbled from time to time over some oversights. But I think we are able to fix them in a quick manner. So if you think of the traditional model of open source development as we see it on many projects, there's a continuous integration and build cycle. If you think of Tinderboxes, there are build machines running all of the time. If a developer checks in some code, it gets into the machinery of the tinderbox, and after some hours, a developer usually get the result of his change. So if you look into the Mozilla guidelines, you see that developers are required to stay at their computer until the tinderbox gets green and he's sure that his stuff compiles on the main platforms. So in the OpenOffice org model, you can imagine this is would be difficult just to wait for 10 hours, 20 hours until your stuff gets compiled. So it's problematic. Also, it's problematic the more developers are participating in development. I think this model is working well with a certain amount of developers, but I can't imagine this, that this will work with 100, 200 developers continuously committing changes to the code. This would up in conjunction with the big build times we have in a mess. We also made this experience. Another paradigm you hear often, release early and often what you have. No problem with that. If you have a new version, just release it, get feedback, and if there are any breaks in the build, you get the feedback fast, you do the fix fast, commit back to the code, and it's fixed. Stabilizing a release is also often done in the regular model. You declare some timeline in front of the release, not accepting anymore all changes a developer would like to do to the code base. Just take a deep, sharp look on the changes and try to make a release in a stable manner. Okay, the problems of the traditional model I already explained. There can be too many changes within a build cycle. The problem of not having atomic commits if you have a large basis of developers, I think it's pretty obvious, and it's also addressed by some other source control systems already. But currently we are with CVS, which has not the ability for atomic commits. The problem with the release early and often paradigm is that there are two contradictory wishes we have here. The developer wants to have his code tested by other parties, and the user wants already used tested code. I think most users want them. There might be some exceptions, but I think a user is expecting that a build is working. And make a release stable can be an unpredictable process. We all can imagine that the more developers are participating in a product, the longer it can take to make a release stable, and the more complex a product is, this can take some time. So if you want to use a time-driven model to release, so if you say, I want to release at April 1st, this might be a pearl joke. Okay, these numbers are also a little bit old. I think we are still over 100 developers which are committing on a regular basis to the repository. 450 commits per day. It depends on the time, but it makes clear that there's a huge traffic in the repository. I think the fixing more than 4,000 issues is now outdated. I think we are right now at 8,000 for the 2.0 release. And I think there are also more than 500 people in the meantime involved. So these problems led us, I think, about 2 to 3 years ago to transition to a new model of development. Instead of having continuous commits, we are thinking it's better to have scheduled commits. Scheduled commits does mean that you try to simulate an atomic commit at a time when a fix is really ready. Another point is that we want to do QA before the integration, before CVS commits are happening, not only on the developer's box, but also on other boxes from QA people, for instance. Another goal we had, have less problems on the master build. In former times, if we processed the old model, we had a lot of breakages. There was never a build which went through smoothly. The goal is to have a new build, a new milestone available with no error. I think we are now pretty good at this. I think Pavel is agreeing. If we think of former builds, we often had 2 or 3 errors in that, and I think we are almost error-free in the most recent builds, except of maybe some configuration problems from time to time. But I think the code itself compiles now very smooth. The main goal of that was having the possibility to reschedule a feature if it's not ready. Rescheduling means if it's not ready for 2.0 in time, we move it to the next target, to the next release, maybe 2.01 or Open Office 3, whatever the next release will be, without any pain for the developer, without having fragments of new code in a released product. This has been implemented with CVS branches. We call the new concept child workspace, meaning the branch which is created in CVS is a child workspace branch. It's not a new model. If you think of the Mozilla development, you will see that they had that model for years right now. I think almost every 4 weeks. My experience is there are also some kind of old. A branch is created, and this branch is driven until to a release, and then a new branch for the next release will be created there. The difference we are doing here is that we have the possibility to do updates on this CVS branch. Meaning, if we have created a branch and in the meantime other commits on the master, on the main trunk of CVS are happening, we have mechanisms available to join these changes into the child workspace branch on a regular basis. So if you look on this picture, you see the resync line there. So we are trying to update the branch of the latest changes on the master before we are doing QA and merging the whole stuff back into the main trunk of the source code repository. So conflicts are resolved on the branch, not on the master. This is the main difference between the traditional model, I think. So the burden of resolving conflicts has the developer, not the release engineering. This makes sense because we are talking about integrating, I think Pavel had the numbers yesterday, about 30, 40 child workspaces per week. So you can imagine if you have the burden of resolving conflicts on one person, this would not be possible. There are several tools available for the child workspace handling. I don't want to mention them all. There are some documentation available on the website. If you have any questions about that, if you experience this the first time, please join the IRC channel on Freenode and ask the people around if I can help if you have any problems. We have a front end for all the child workspace handling. Here you can see some data for a child workspace, some information about it, on what milestone it is based, what is the plan for integrating date, which tasks are added. This makes it for QA very easy to have a quick look over the changes, test them, and verify the issues, because release engineering knows that this child workspace can be integrated. So the child workspaces are registered in this tool. There's a description. What QA is needed? Is there only little impact? Is there big impact expected? Is it has it changed in UI or help? What's the time frame? Are other developers involved in those changes, and so on? So I think I step quickly over the slides here. So the outcome of all this is that we still have continuous integration and builds. Continuous integrations in the sense of integrating whole feature sets as a whole, simulating atomic commits of these file sets. Issues are grouped to logical entities, so that it is easy for QA to concentrate on this child workspace and verify them in a quick manner. Release early and often, I think we proved that it is still possible with this change model. I think over the last 2 years we almost released every 2 weeks a new milestone. I think it would be possible to release more milestones. If there's any need for this, I think we would do that. But my impression is every 2 weeks a milestone is enough for most users. Maybe not for developers, but for users who want to test new versions, it's almost enough. Stabilizing the release is also more easy right now, because only features which are really ready get into the release. I think we are not perfect yet, but the last release has shown that the latest snapshot since beta 1 are pretty stable and are used by many users for already for production use. We got a lot of good feedback and a lot of no feedback, I would like to say, which shows that the people are really satisfied with the quality of the latest, I would say, 30 snapshots, 40 snapshots. I think this is a major step forward in comparison to older releases we did. So I want to speak a little bit about some challenges we are currently facing. We had a talk in the engineering steering committee 2 days ago that there might be some other requirements to the model we are using right now. Some people are expressing the wish that they want to have broader testing on experimental code. The problem we have currently is that we only have to integrate tested, well-documented code and we want to have a stable release. Other people are saying, I have new code, it's very interesting for new users, and there's a pain for them just to take the child workspace and only to test one new feature, if they're interested in three different new features. And if you want to have a look on the interactions of new features. The outcome of this would be that we would have more than one build. In the moment we have only the stable snapshot we are providing every 2 weeks. If you want to have an experimental code line, you would have another build available that users can take, or developers can take, UA persons can take, and can have a look on more than one experimental feature at a time. Another thing of Groomer is the so-called specification process. To have a code line almost stable, we require the developer to write specifications for new features. Specifications are meant to have a common understanding from developers, QA persons, and users to have a new feature in a manner that this feature is doing what everybody expects to do. And if you think of experimental new code, you can imagine that the final specification is not yet available in the moment you are developing or experimenting with new code. You're looking for feedback from the user. You might have to change a specification then, and this makes it hard with the current model. We also experience that communication might be an issue, or is in fact an issue. We have several build systems around with different objectives, with different optimizations in it, and I think we have to speak with each other about the pros and cons of the different build systems and come to a synergy to work together to avoid duplication of efforts. So if you're thinking of the experimental code line, there are several possibilities to implement that. The first obvious thing is to work with if devs in the code. I think the negative impacts of that are pretty obvious. The maintenance of that is difficult. You have to remove these if devs after some time. And if these if devs are interleaving with each other, it might be problematic all the time. There was a question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering why experiment code and input code is changing a lot of the core. But we've got components, surely you can write components and have that as an optional demo that people can test and give feedback, and they know that that's exactly what it's all about.
Yes, this would be the best solution to have new experimental code in a component. Then deployment of the new experimental code would be very easy and a no-brainer. But this is not always possible. In the ideal world, it would be the best solution. Yes?
Can you give me an example of
that? Maybe Florian or Matthias have an example, a good example in mind.
Yeah, I think in the filters you make act in a certain document important, but you don't know exactly how it will affect other documents. So, yeah, it's experimental. You just have to see whether it's correct, whether the understanding of Microsoft algorithm is correct or not.
So, filter seems to be an example, or if you are digging deep into application cores which are not fully prepared, that new experimental code can be put out into a known component. So there might be a little bit of overhead to put all new functionality into a component. You might to have to invent new API functionality for doing that, and the effort for this might be pretty high. Almost, it should be possible, and it would be good to have that available. But from practice, it is not possible in all cases. Another concept could be to have a cascading parent-child concept for child workspaces available, so that you are able to have submasters implemented, so that you can join child workspaces into another child workspace, compile it together, do your own build, and release it to your testers. And after they say okay, and we have all other requirements fulfilled, we can integrate this new child master into the real master. This might be another approach for this. Or another example would be a dependent master, a parallel master to the main master, which is resynced on a regular basis, and on which other child workspaces gets integrated all of the time, and a separate build is then made on this master. The open question here is, if we are doing integrations of all these child workspaces which are tested together, is it better to integrate the child workspaces separately or join the complete master into the parent master? I think this is what we have to think about, which would be the better solution. So if you, this would be an example for the dependent master from the main master. The new master would be branched off as a CVS branch, no new gear. It's resynced on a regular basis. CVS integrations are happening on the master, and at the end, QA processes would act on them. The same approach could be used for doing QA on child workspaces. Time has shown that we have problems in the community to find a QA representative for your child workspace. Not only a QA representative, but also the possibility to compile the child workspace at least on two major platforms, one Unix, one Windows. So we had this situation from time to time that child workspaces are waiting for a QA approval, and nobody is interested in doing QA for that. So the same mechanism I introduced here for the experimental code line may be used for doing QA on child workspaces. I think you get the idea. Another contradictory point is the source control system we are using. I often heard some complaints about performance of the current CVS implementation, and we are wondering if another source control system would solve the problems we have. So if anybody is interested in having a deeper look into this topic, he's invited to do some investigations and to do some discussions if there's a better solution thinkable. Another topic which is discussed in the last weeks more often is the teamwork. I mentioned this for specifications earlier. It's hard to inform a so-called I team the need of having a specification written or a plan written, what we intend to do with code changes. I think this is a topic we will discuss in the Engineering Steering Council in the next weeks or months. So I have to speed up a little bit. So in total, we come to a few to-dos we have to think of in the next time. We have to think of experimental and QA code lines. We have to think of interaction with within the community, is the better word here, about the specification process, about dealing with requests for enhancements and things like that, that we come to a better solution there. Planning releases is also a topic we should have in mind. What is the roadmap for the next time, for the next 6 months, for the next 12 months? What can we expect? When will what happen? I think the quick CVS round trips we already have almost. Amazingly, I saw some child workspaces with a turnaround time of a few hours. It was quite impressive. So I think we get code changes fast enough into the process, if there are into the code line, if the need is agreed on. Get automatic tinderbox builds for child workspaces. It's there from the last time. I think Michael, Volker are still working on this to make this happen, that the build of child workspaces is more easy if the platform is not available on your desk. Yeah, and the QA problem in general. Enhancing smoke tests, automatic tests, so that no personal interaction with QA is involved would help for specific child workspaces, I think. So I think that's it. So I'm open for questions.
Sure.
My impression is that the setup of child workspaces is now pretty easy. I think it seems to be a little bit complex if you look for the first time for it, but my experience from the last month is that we saw a lot of new people which now successful create new child workspaces, are familiar with the life cycle of child workspaces. Maybe I should have some numbers for it to prove that, but I think Pavel shakes his head and agrees it's much more easy, and I'm not aware of any major hurdles right now. If there are major hurdles, please let us know.
Okay.
That is, I meant with communicate.
Nobody's told me a horror story lately. I just remember that was a pressing issue last year. So.
Yes, I think we made a great improvement there. So I think we can a little bit proud of it.
So I know that when identical changes are submitted to, I mean, there are essentially four big forks now, right? There's all about this code base. There's the stuff Novella's doing, which they're committed to trying to get back in, so it doesn't really qualify support. There's IBM, which is making a proprietary product, and that we know about that one. There's one other one. I've lost it, wherever it is. Anyway, say it's just a three. When we submit stuff into the two that are easy to get stuff into, Novella and Open Office, the Novellas go right in, Open Office ones take a long time. You want to comment on why that is? I think I know the answer.
So I didn't really get the question.
How come you not more responsive, the short version?
More responsiveness is not the problem if everybody would use the CVS repository. There we have the mechanisms available to detect identical changes, to resolve them in time, and not to put the burden on the people who are outside the CVS repository. I think it's almost well known, if you are maintaining a branch with patches over a long time, the maintenance costs will grow over the time. The only possibility you have is to get your code into the main CVS. It must not be necessarily in the main trunk at the first step. It already helps if you have it on the child workspace, on a branch, and use the mechanisms we provide to stay in sync with the main development. Answer this question? No.
Yes, so you say you're working harder to make it better, I think.
I think there is also some fundamental difference in compromise between responsiveness and quality, or sometimes.
See, now I thought you guys were going to tell me they're only doing one operating system and it's easier.
That might be one reason, but. Like Michael always tells, part of this responsiveness comes from this release early and often and let the users find bugs philosophy. And like Martin explained, the other approach or the other end of that compromise between fast reaction and stable releases is that it might take some time. So Martin released every 2 weeks milestones. This could be a fast response time for some people, for others it's just too slow. You need to find some kind of compromise there.
Thank you.
When you discuss on the specification process and building and QA, there doesn't seem to be community involvement in that specification. It seems, I'm just trying to bounce my idea, but it seems to be really nice if there was more community involvement, that somebody puts in a request and they're obviously really fired up about it, that there was a more streamlined process to say, this is what we will need by way of the specification problem. We need to know a QA team, or that this is the QA process that's going to happen. And actually, that person is responsible for getting other members of the community to build up a team to actually solve a lot of those. So you guys are concentrating on the coding, because for most of us that's just too hard. But some of this other stuff we can do.
Sounds fine. The short answer is yes.
Yeah, but the initiative, the processes for that, it's going to take something to get that up and running. But we have to know that, how do we get that process going? That's, I guess, what we need.
Yes, agreed. I think we have to talk about the problems we currently have with specification or so-called specification process. I just today took a look on the webpage of the specs project, and I agree. I think we have to be more specific on this process. What are the criteria to have a specification required for a new feature? In which cases it's not required? In which cases we only have to write a test plan, or in which cases we simply have to do some communication within the team. I think this is a topic we have to work on, and of course you are invited to participate in this discussion. There's a mailing list in the specs project, staff@specs.openoffice.org. I can't imagine of another better place. So I think will have a look on this the next weeks, and I think we might try to make sure that there are responses in time and discussions in time also from the guys in Hamburg who are involved in this. Yeah?
As at least the mailing list is closely related to the off email. So we have a process set up for evaluating our fees against mailing list. It should be at least a note that there's something going on that has been communicated.
Yes. Okay.
I'm just curious, for the Google Summer form, there are some changes that have
I think no.
Can we also do that?
No, because it's not integrated.
I would like to understand how that works.
So if you think of the tapped interface, it's not even in the child workspace, it's just code existing as a patch somewhere. I would say at the moment yes, but the trick of contribution to openoffice.org is to get things into the master, and I don't see any reason why this new component shouldn't be in the master.
Yes, but theoretically it is separate, so you can put it in the master. It works from its own and put it on the download side.
Yes.
But it does not have to be.
I disagree here a little bit.
This was just Google Summer project with the students. We had a specification to tell our students what they should do.
But we had this topic before. If you are implementing things in a Luna component, things might get more easy to do. But I think the main objective should be to contribute this back and make it available for all users we have, meaning it should be integrated earlier or later into the code base. I think it's a good example because it shows that it makes sense to have experimental code available very early. And
in some fashion.
Yeah. Stefan?
Surely they're holding it for us.